Hey guys, this is Mark Potter. Welcome to another episode of Brushstrokes, a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. Today's episode is brought to you by Conduit Incorporated, channeling content and connections for all your custom content needs and the development of the top of the funnel relationships. Visit www.conduit-inc.com. I am really, really proud today to present a conversation I had with a good friend of mine, Dr. Colby Jubenville. Many of you will remember that Dr. Jubenville spoke at our event a couple years ago and knocked it out of the park. He is an author twice over. He has written a book called Zebras and Cheetahs, Look Different and Stay Agile to Survive the Business Jungle. He has recently written another book, and it is a little bit more focused on us individually. It's called Me, How to Sell Who You Are, What You Do, and Why You Matter to the World. Both books resonate perfectly with our community and talk specifically about how you need to get paid more for your value and less for your time. He is a fun guy. He is a good old boy from Mobile, Alabama, which is a great deal of his charm. And he is a teacher at Middle Tennessee State University, where he is engaging the youth of America and the next generation of worker. So his perspective as a researcher for his books, his consulting for large organizations, and his teaching with this next generation gives him a unique perspective on what matters to us. And in this day and age, I think he kind of touches upon something that is really, really important to all of us who are trying to sell, and kind of peels back the onion on trust. I won't give you the answer because I want you to listen to the podcast. So without further ado, enjoy a little bit of Dr. Colby Jubenville. The team is all still in Atlanta, and you know, Big Daddy is running around, you know, trying to figure some things out, and it's all good. How about you? What's going on with you?
You're still married.
I am still married, man. Happily married, two beautiful kids, and pretty much. Pretty much the luckiest guy in the world.
Yeah, I am too. I secured a 7-figure gift, and I don't know if you read that article, but launched a student success center here on campus, and finished up a second book, and continued to consult and write for the Washington Times, and just live the dream.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And you know, I think it was largely spearheaded by, you know, we got you kind of launched out into the world. From Think MSP.
I will be forever grateful. My feelings are still hurt that you did not bring me in for the last one, but that does, you know, there's always another opportunity for you to make up for that.
That's
so
right.
We'll see what happens.
That's right. We got to, you know, it is, you got to leave them wanting more. So, tell me about your new book. You know, talk about
so
your
we
new
are
book.
We are recording right now or not?
We are, buddy. We are. I like to, you know, I'll tell you, this has been a really fun thing because I just like to, I have a philosophy is you know, this will resonate with you, and I just, you know, you do business with your friends, I've got a lot of friends in the industry, and it's just been a great industry for me. So I sit there and I go through my Rolodex and I find people I need to reach out to. And I thought, you know, our calls
are fun. Valuable.
They're fun. Yeah. And, you know, I sit there and, you know, I certainly talk a lot, but I usually, you know, somebody said to me on one of my podcasts, he said, my God, this is unbelievable. I've never been in a situation where I did more talking than you. So it's not only is it interesting for the audience, but it's cathartic for me because I can shut up. But, and I get to find people like you and I think people want a little bit of perspective on the world, and you have a unique perspective in that not only do you author thoughtful stuff, but you work with large organizations, but you also are teaching and connecting with a new generation of workers. So you've got, you're hitting it from a couple of different places, and it's really important for our industry, which, well, any industry that's going through transformation. So, you know, as I was going through it, I thought, I could give Colby a call, man. We got to do this.
Well, I think, you know, I think it boils down to what you just said, and I think it's probably one of the gifts that you have. It's relationship. And so I was down at the Florida Public Relations Association's winter meeting speaking to a group there. It was an intimate group. Reminded me a whole lot of what you do there with Think MSP. And I ran into a guy named Roger Penn.
Okay.
And Roger Penn is a founder and runs Curly and Penn, which they are just two absolute rock stars in public relations. And so they run public relations for clients like Universal. And what's just so cool about my life, and I'm sometimes I think that I didn't choose it, that it chose me, but in a two-day winter meeting, we built a relationship around us just connecting there at this little meeting. And from that, so many other little opportunities have happened. So you spoke to this idea of, hey, Colby, you know, you work with bigger corporations, you get to speak to your audience through the Washington Times blog, and then you get to connect with students. And the common factor is relationship. And so if we know that relationship is the critical piece today, and it's about a personal relationship, then the question that I'll ask audiences is who teaches us how to build personal relationships? And I think the answer, Mark, is I don't think people do.
Yeah.
And so I think it starts with this, and this is where I want to kind of start our conversation today, is I think for people to have personal relationships with you, I think they have to trust you. And then that's an old idea that's been around forever. But here's the question that I ask the audience that I think is so powerful and interesting, and that is, if we believe that trust is such a critical part to building personal relationships, then what is the foundation of trust?
Mm-hmm.
What is the foundation of trust? And to me, the foundation of trust is safety. And safety looks like this in business, in relationships. Am I known? Am I heard? Am I valued? Am I important? Does my opinion matter? And when I look at somebody like yourself and ask, why has he been able to carve out that space and do what you do within that industry? It's because I think you have the ability to let other people feel safe in terms of being known, being heard, being valued, being important, and having their opinion matter. And so if you're looking to start today to build those personal relationships, I think you have to have a conversation around this idea of what is the foundation of trust. Because once you establish that, and you really can build trust, you and I have trust, we've gone back and forth. I mean, you texted me last night, Colby. I mean, does your audience know that you play hockey at 11 at night? I mean, what is going on? I don't want to talk about that right now, but I want you just to, I wanted to put that out to the audience. You're playing hockey at 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah. No, it's, that's, again, another kind of nut job.
But if the foundation of trust is safety, then we can move into trust. Then here's what trust creates. It creates open and honest conversation, which are conversations that you and I can have with each other, with ourselves, with our spouses, with other people. And if you can be open and honest, then you can be transparent. And if you can be transparent, then you can be vulnerable. But we don't look at it in that series or sequence of events. We look at it, all we say is, hey, Mark, do you trust me? Because I trust you, and we got to have trust. It's so much more than that.
Yeah, that's pretty good, man. The safety thing, that's a big deal. How do you do that? How do you let somebody know this is safe, right? Because that's right? Because it's probably not only that. So I'll ask you that, but then at the same time, the technology of today puts us in a position. It's harder to find out, we're cocooning ourselves, right? And so we don't even know who's safe and who's not. And so Is that lending? Is that making it more challenging to find out who's safe? Because that's a really, really interesting point you bring up.
I think two things. I think I'll answer your second question first. Yes, technology has made it more difficult. And I think the only way you can truly articulate your value to someone else and understand what it means to really trust them in terms of safety is through face-to-face interaction. Mm-hmm. I think it can only happen through face-to-face interaction. So you're going to have to get away from the technology, and you're going to have to get face-to-face if you really want to build relationships that are personal.
Mm-hmm.
I think the second thing is that you asked me specifically, so what does that look like? What does safety look like in terms of business and relationship? Well, it happened with you and me earlier when we were talking about the event that you had for this year. I was able to say exactly what I wanted to say to you because I felt safe with you and because you knew and you know who I am in terms of a teacher, in terms of a consultant, in terms of an author, in terms of a speaker. And you know who
yep.
that is. And so one of the things that Chip Dodd, who I've really spent a lot of time reading here recently, he runs the Center for Professional Excellence. One of the things that he says is that good things happen to known people. And it's not what you typically think in terms of having a slick presence or a branded business card. What he's talking about is having more of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so those kind of people, one of the things that he's so powerful that he says, and I wrote a blog about here recently with the Washington Times, but he says those people ask for help, give help, and receive help. They need well. And so I think part of what safety looks like in terms of business is first knowing yourself. And that's the only way, really, I think you can really connect and be safe with other people in terms of, am I known? Am I heard? Am I valued? Am I important?
Mm-hmm.
That's my opinion.
Yeah, and that's really good stuff. And I think it's great because I think in this day and age, like you mentioned it, I mean, it's about who knows you, right? And you and I have talked about this before, and that's the thing. You know, I grew up in this industry. I dedicated my life to this industry, and so but a lot of times people go, God, I want to sell product. I want to sell stuff, and I want to sell to anybody who's anybody. Right? Because it becomes all about the Benjamins. But maybe we're in this world, and again, you see these new generations coming out. Maybe we're in this world where the answer is on the other side of this complex network technology world. And that is that it is more simple. It is going back to people want to connect on a more sincere level. And that doesn't necessarily, it might narrow the pool a bit. You know, that's where I think there's a struggle too, is that people, you have to get to that vulnerable point that you're talking about where you say, I am safe with this person.
Yeah.
And but yet that means, wait a minute, I really want a lot of money, so I can't be safe with all these people. I mean, and so it's hard. It's a catch 22. Have you seen that change? Do you feel that change in business?
Yeah, I don't think it's a catch 22, and here's why. I think the other is a catch 22, and I think it's what typically happens to most of us. And so the catch 22 is this idea of having more, but mm-hmm. still being who we're supposed to be. And so let's go back all the way to fifth grade or sixth grade. We're taught from a very early age, here's what we're taught. If you want more, you have to be more educated. You have to have more relationships. You have to have more resources. You have to have more opportunity. And reality, what we find out, some of us find out when we go through this process, either through struggle or failure or relationship or whatever it may be, is that if we want to have more, we've got to have more of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so the catch 22 to me is not living the life you're supposed to live in order to become the person that you're supposed to become. It's it's bowing down to the Benjamins and making that the most important piece. And, you know, I was raised by two educators that taught me the way you take on the world is to become an educator and marry an educator and educate other people. And as you know, and we've discussed, that works all the way up to you want these things called lifestyle and freedom. Mm-hmm. And then at that point, you got to pull back and you got to say to yourself, you know, what is it that I really want? And the conclusion that I came to through that process is I want to get paid for my value and not my time. And so to do that, I really think you need to have more of you. And in my latest blog with the Washington Times, I really speak to this idea. And so if you don't mind, I'd kind of like to share it with the audience and then maybe send them back to read it. If I could just take 2 minutes to tell the story.
Yeah. That'd be awesome.
I was driving down the road headed to class, and I could see that this guy who was visually impaired was in trouble. I mean, I could tell. I'm probably more empathetic than most because I was born with something called remnants of the pupillary membrane. So I've had to fight through my own visual challenges as well. And so I saw that. And then the part that really blew me away is I could see people that noticed that he was in trouble and just walked right past him. And so there was one of my GA was riding down the road with me, and I stopped the car in the middle of the street, put it in park, jumped out, and I said, look, I'm going to go help this guy. You can take the car in from here. And I go running over there to help, and I said, hey, man, look, I'm a professor here. Are you in trouble? And he said, yeah, I am in trouble. And I said, well, tell me what you need, and I'll help you get what you need. And he said, well, I'm trying to get to the bookstore. I started laughing because the bookstore is not anywhere close to where he is.
Right.
And so I said, well, look, I know you don't know me, but if you'll just trust me, I'll put you in the car. I'll take you over there. I'll give you my cell phone number, and we'll get you squared away. And so we took him over there, and I kept asking myself, all I could think about on the way over there was why would other people walk right past this guy who obviously needed help?
Right.
And it goes back to Mark exactly about what we're talking about here in terms of personal relationships. The reason they walk past him is because they don't even know themselves. What Chip Dodd says is so powerful is that people who are known guide, attract, teach, notify, exhort, educate, encourage, and here's my favorite part, and need well. They give in to their vulnerability and their competence. They have a passion to move forward in the vision of life. And so I went in and I asked those kids at class, and I mean, really, I started to break down, to be quite honest with you, just because I was just so distraught about this. And I said, why would you walk past somebody that obviously needed your help? And I really could not get an answer other than what they were really saying was, man, I don't even know myself. I don't even know who I am. Huh. And so that goes back to what I think we're talking about here. If you really want to build personal relationships, and you don't have to, you can make it all about the money. And there's enough opportunity in the world today where you can,
right,
if that's what you choose to. But if you do want to build personal relationships, I think it starts with knowing yourself.
Yeah. And doing, and so what do you do? I mean, you got to go through a little bit of a self-diagnosis, right? I mean, you got to say, you know, what's important to me? What's my motivation? And then decide, like you said, you know, what is it that's really important? Because you talk about lifestyle, that kind of stuff. You're right. And I don't know, maybe it's because I'm getting older and, you know, you get to a point where you sit there and go, none of that stuff matters, you know, and just do the right stuff and do the right stuff by others. And
well, that's it. What you just said is none of that other stuff matters.
Right.
Brene Brown says it best. She said, the most basic need of people is to connect and feel connected. I can only imagine what that 20-year-old kid must have felt like as he's got his stick out and he can't see and he's disconnected from anything and everything in the world.
Right.
And all it took for me was to see that and to say, I got to step in there because I know what that feels like.
Yeah.
And Chip says it best, man. I know you because I know me. And I think what has to happen is you've got to know yourself. And I think that begins by asking yourself, what is it that matters? What always mattered to me was to coach and teach on an ever-increasing stage. I mean, if you ask me, you know, and I know you heard me say that when I spoke to your group, but that's never going to change. When I go speak to 100,000 people, it's because I want to coach and teach on an ever-increasing stage. And that's just because I found myself in 10th grade at St. Paul's Episcopal School down there in Mobile, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that doesn't happen for people. In fact, the system is built so it doesn't happen for people.
Well, yeah, that's what, you know, and I want to ask you about that. And you know, before I do, though, so the guy was pretty grateful to you?
Yeah, I think so. For what a 3-minute exchange could be.
I mean, he's not locked in your basement, right? You didn't take, you know. No, I think, I got to believe he's grateful. But you're right. So you just touched upon something I got to ask you. And this is, again, you talk about relationships. You talk about all this stuff. It's like, this is paramount. And it's to you and me, growing up, relationships, sure, that was it. And we were out running around with kids and jumping in ponds. And, you know, our parents probably didn't know where we were. And it's a different world that these guys are. So when you're telling that story, I'm sitting there thinking about these kids and that they don't know themselves. You're right. Because they maybe part of the discovery is that they got to put some of this technology down. I mean, it's quite honestly, it's why we love our industry so much. You know, I know print. People say, oh, that print's not good, but it's still a tangible thing, and it's still, there's an experience of going through it that is a bit nostalgic. I just think, and you see it firsthand with these kids, you're right. I think maybe you and I have the benefit of not growing up in this antiseptic world of technology, and now they do, and they probably have no sense of self. Do you see it every day?
Oh, well, college used to be about finding yourself, and I don't know if it's antiseptic because the experiences that my son has at 14 and your children have are such a heightened level of smell, taste, touch, feel compared to what you and I did when we were 14. And so I think it skews more towards the blurriness, more towards the noisiness, more towards the fuzziness of all that's coming out of the fire hose that they're trying to drink from. It's still possible. Let me give you a great example. I've got a good friend of mine. He is an electrician, and him and his son work all over Rutherford County. And I just met him sometime along the way, and we became best of friends. And so I'll call him, and I'll just say, hey, whenever you can fit me in, I got to do this, 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 and this. And so he was over recently, and we've had a beer together. We hang out together. I mean, I really love this guy's perspective on life. And, you know, he thinks because of what I do that I'm like some kind of guru or, you know, a business philosopher or something. I mean, and it's just funny to me that somebody would have that sort of perspective. But when at the end of the day, I, like you, am just another guy that is trying to live out my life and take care of my family and do the things that we all have to do in order to provide. And so I went up to him and I said, hey, Dale, man, I got to run. I got to go run over here and take Mary Burke somewhere. But, hey, thanks for everything. You just lock up when you leave. And so he called me a couple of days later, and he said, you know, we were up there in the attic and we were dropping that can light in, and Jack is my son. Mm-hmm. He came up to me and he climbed up those stairs and he said, hey, Mr. Dell, I can't tell you how much I really appreciate you dropping that can light down into my shower and putting that fan in there. I mean, my dad always talks about the great work that you do, and I really appreciate you taking the time to do that. And he said, Colby, I have never seen a child that's 14 years old. And so, you know, you got kids about the same age. I worry mm-hmm. about this boy all the time. And a little piece of me, Mark, a little piece of me said, you know what? you know, he may not have the best grades in the world, and he may not run as hard as fast as others in terms of drive and ambition, but if that boy can just figure that little piece of relationship out,
mm-hmm.
he can figure that out, then heck, we're 60% of the way there. And so I do think that these kids are responding to not only the world that they live in, but the damn script that we're writing for them.
Right. Yeah, we are. It is. We're writing a script for them. I mean, it gets. That's what I mean. Is maybe antiseptic wasn't the word, but it's. You know, it just seems like they've got to break free from the chains of. I mean, they're teaching the same stuff in school. My kids. Let me tell you. So my kids go to a school, and my son's 13, my daughter's 12, and
yep.
their middle school, three grades, have 2,000 kids in them.
Yeah.
2,000 kids. How do you connect with them? How do they, more importantly, how do they connect with what they're learning? I mean, my daughter can, you know, memorize anything, and you know, I think to myself, they're not learning. In the world, with all this technology, we don't delve into what makes something tick. We're not breaking open the transistor radio and finding out how it works. We're just taking what was done prior and adding on to it. And there's something to be said for the lack of that intelligence that you gathered doing that. There's something to be said for going and delving into what made things the way they are today, as opposed to, well, I can just Google that. And, you know, there's something that be, to me, learning an experiential for yourself. You know, my kids, so we were talking about moving and stuff. Part of it is believe it or not, hockey. And you know, there's been times when you go, God, my second job is being a youth hockey dad, but then I think to myself, what if they didn't have this? Because, my gosh, they're all just sitting down looking at their devices and you know, not looking up at each other and connecting with one another. And I think that's a big deal, and it goes right to what you said, is that these, so the ones who can do that, your son, for example, it's a great example. He can break free and get somebody to lock eyes with him. That's a big deal, but it's harder, in my opinion, than ever before.
I think it is harder than ever before, and I think that, you know, bringing up the example that you bring up, it's two very different challenges. So you mentioned this idea of Google and mm-hmm. and how we unpack information, and I would argue the other way, and here's what I believe, and now this is counterintuitive to what goes on most college campuses. But I think it's why I'm able to do what I do versus what others choose to do. I believe that Google is the most inexpensive, expansive, lightest textbook on the planet. And what we have to do is teach others how to discover and use Google as a discovery process, because what we have done, in fact, in killing the ability to build relationships, we've also killed the ability to discover. And so if you look no further than the Myers-Briggs and look and see what the highest combination of how people characterize themselves, they're not intuitive, they're scanners, and they're sensors. Mm-hmm. And so that speaks to an education system that has killed the ability to be intuitive. Mm-hmm. And so part of what I do here on the campus is I use Google as a way to create discovery opportunities that moves people through points of discovery so that they can, in fact, find that information. Because if you can become self-directed and use something like Google to uncover the market-specific information that you need and combine that with the ability to build relationships,
mm-hmm.
there is nothing that you can't accomplish.
Yeah. No, that's good. No, you're right. And then sometimes it's taking the opposite, right? It's sometimes it is where you see challenge, that needs to be opportunity. Where
okay.
somebody might lament that the world has changed, and kind of like what I was doing. I mean, that's also the opportunity. So where a lot of people might look at, you know, if you use the analogy to the printing industry, where we've got sellers going out and trying to call on agencies and brand owners, you know, they think, God, people don't want to connect. People don't want to connect in this way. And I don't know that that's necessarily the case. They just have the power to filter. And this goes back to your original point, and that is they just have the tools and the power at their hands to realize and figure out who's safe to them.
Brother, and that, yes, and here's, if you read my blog, it's called Go Your Own Way on the Washington Times.
Go Your Own Way.
Go Your Own Way. Just Colby Jubenville, Go Your Own Way, Washington Times. What I got sick of seeing is everybody beating up the millennials. Hey, they're here. We wrote the script for them. All they did was read right from it and show up right at our workplaces, at our front doors, at our kitchen tables. And so, sure, if you want to beat them up, if you want to, you know, bash them, go ahead. But at the end of the day, you got to figure out how to make them productive.
Right.
And it's just like what you know, when you said, hey, it's easy to surround a lament. It is. If we understand, I mean, could you imagine if you and I had Googled 25 years ago?
Oh, my God. Yeah, it would have been unbelievable.
And so let's quit talking about what used to be, and let's acknowledge the true reality that we all face individually and collectively, and then let's unpack the ability. I mean, my gosh, Google can give. It's not about information today. It's about the right information. Mm-hmm. And so if you walk into my classroom, here's what you see, what you'll see. Let's identify the top five problems related to the sport industry. Then let's use Google to go and find the most relevant, up-to-date information related to these three simple ideas.
Yeah.
Here's what we know to be true. Here's what we think is true. Here's what the ideal is.
Yeah.
And then you start to teach people to look at problems, old problems in new ways, and then innovation starts to happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
As opposed to, hey, Mark, here's 100 PowerPoint slides. I'm going to tell you exactly what you should know. You need to memorize it for this test. And when we get done, you can forget all of it.
Right.
No, that's over. Those
right.
Days are over.
Yeah. No, I think that our industry, and what I want to ask is your advice for them, but I set you up here that say, look, you know this. You've spoken to our group and knocked it out of the park. And we, as an industry, I think are about that relationship. But I think we're a different. They're all tools, but we offer a pathway to that safety zone. I think we, you know, because print is tangible, and there's this guy. Dr. Eagleman out of Baylor, and he's done this neuroscience of touch stuff, and it's amazing.
Oh, yeah, I've read that stuff. You showed me that stuff. It's powerful.
It is powerful stuff, and you know, that's how we interpret the world is through touch. It's why, you know, iPads and all the iPhones and all that stuff have done so well. But at the same time, print is really tangible, and he talks about how the NBA teams that do the best, they, you know, they're slapping five and patting each other on the butt a little bit more than the guys who don't do well. So it's really interesting. And I think our industry is a direct path to that safety zone that you're talking about. And then we have, you know, obviously wonderful people, but so in this world, if you're saying, look, hey, what's my advice to this print community and how they start to transform themselves and look for their path to the future. What are some of the top things that you would tell them?
Well, here's what I'd say, and you know, this is going to sound self-serving, but it's not. I would not be where I am today if you did not give me a chance. I wouldn't be, and let me tell you why, and why I agree with everything that you just said. 6 months later, I build one of the deepest, most personal relationships I've ever built with a guy named Tom Moe out of Minneapolis, Minnesota. Yeah. We become the best of friends. Our wives are the best of friends. He brings me up to Minneapolis and I speak at DPI's event and become friends with his friends. We're going to a Minnesota versus MTSU game, and we're going to sit in the Minnesota box and be with all his relationships. And so if that is not indicative of where we are, it's not about product benefit. It's not about needs. It's about relationship. And so when you gave me the ability, you said, hey, man, I just take this thing in a completely different way. I mean, for me, it's about intimacy. For me, it's about relationship. That was just such a turning point for me that I thought, well, if we're going to build brands, what kind of brands should they be?
Right.
They should be personal. If we're going to build relationships, what kind of relationship should they be? They should be personal. And so I took 10, I went back to my entire deal, and I said, what are the 10 most powerful ideas related to personal relationship? What are the 10 most powerful ideas related to personal brand? And so if I was going to boil it down to one idea for your audience to take away, it's if you do believe that it's no longer about, because the competition is so intense, that it's no longer about benefits or needs, and it is about relationship, then find an article, find a blog, find a book, find a podcast about how to build personal relationships and start to become open to that. And it goes back to that simple idea, what is the foundation of trust? I could call you and I could say, hey, Mark, I'm really pissed that you did not bring me back into your event.
Right.
I could. And you know what?
You did.
You did say it. Here's what you said. I did. They told me the ones we love, we hurt the most. And I was like, well, I'm going to do such a great job that you're going to have to bring me back. But you know what? That's because we have a trusting relationship.
That's right. I love it.
And you know, and you said, hey, I mean, I paid you in the bar bill last year alone, right?
That is true. Well, we're going to have to talk about it this year. I mean, we'll take that conversation offline because I think there's a, no, seriously. I'm changing up some stuff. I'm probably going to move it here. I'm trying to negotiate right now, but to have it here in Charlotte, but we'll take that. But yeah, you're right. And I agree with that. And I do. That's the beauty of the today. And that is, we are in a time when it is all about, you know, the personal. And I think that this whole idea around safety is a big deal. I think that's a really compelling thing. I think, you know, you hit something really, really right on the head there, because, and our audience will probably take that and run with it, because everybody talks about trust. But I think if you peel back the onion, so to speak, yeah, safety. I thought first, as soon as you said that, I thought my daughter, every night, you know, I put her to bed and she looks and I'm about to close the door and she goes, will you keep me safe? And I say, always.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And in business, because you asked this question, and yeah, it's just like when you and I were kids and you were real careful about who you asked to push you on the swing, because if you ask the wrong person to push you on the swing, they'll push you right off of it and try to hurt you.
Yeah.
And so the safety in business is, am I known? Am I heard? And I mean, for me and you, the relationship that we have is, you heard me out. I said, Mark, I got this new book. It's really good. You're going to want me there.
Right.
Colby, I love you. I know your stuff. You're great stuff. I gotta bring in these other people this time. And I kept pushing on you, but at least you heard me out. And so I didn't walk away mad. I didn't walk away frustrated. I was like, what? Mark heard me. He knows me. I know him. And he said what he wanted. You multiply those relationships, I can do the same. I can call Tom Moe and do the same thing. You do that 10 times, and you can't not get what you want. And
yeah,
then you can't not get in a space where you don't have dissonance. And maybe we could pick this up in the next time, but here's what I want you to think about.
Yeah.
The most singular competitive advantage a company can create for themselves today is in organizational health. And really what we're talking about is a piece that I use in organizational health. And if you look at the companies that are successful and win today, they have this idea of agreed upon reality. They have healthy conflict. And they have this agreed upon reality. This is truly what's going on in our organization. This is what's truly going on within our marketplace. And this is what we're going to have to do to create this agreed upon future. And all of that starts with trust, and all of that starts with safety.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. I love it. Well, tell me, so before I let you go, two things. One, talk about title and your book, your new book.
Yes, yeah. The new book, it's to help my ego. It's titled Me, How to Sell Who You Are, What You Do, and Why You Matter to the World. And it's really a funny story. I was like, well, Apple has there's already been this great book in personal branding by a guy named Tom Peters called The Brand Called You. And I was like, but nobody owns me. So I'm going to take me, how to sell who you are, what you do, and why you matter to the world. Now, here's what's really cool. I've taken this to the next level. I've partnered with who I believe are the latest and greatest and most expansive, however you want to couch it up. But Harrison Assessment, I have partnered with them because all of their assessments. In fact, who introduced me to Harrison Assessment? None other than Mark Potter.
Yeah.
So Harrison Assessment is part of this book, and you can complete some Harrison Assessments that are related to personal branding as part of this book. And so not only do we offer the content, but we offer a way to get some feedback, and feedback, as you know, is where we learn the most. So Julie has been great.
That's awesome.
Focus. Julie and Peak Focus are part of the Center for Student Coaching and Success. They put together a beautiful package for me, and so now students get to come in here. And what was so cool, dude, is somebody, a big CEO came down from Nashville, and he said, you know, what you're doing for these kids is what we do for our people after about 5 to 10 years in the business. And I thought, that's called innovation right there. If I can get these kids ahead of the curve, then gosh, the sky's the limit. So that's the book, Me, How to Sell Who You Are, What You Do, and Why You Matter to the World. The website for the book is mepersonalbrand.com.
Cool.
Mepersonalbrand.com. And mepersonalbranding.com.
Okay.
Mepersonalbranding.com. My Twitter is at Dr. Jubenville, and my website is drjubenville.com.
Well, you know, I'm glad we connected. I'll tell you what. I'm going to be in Nashville. Golly, I'm going to be there in April. It's called the Marketing United Conference. Have you heard of that?
I have not.
It's down at the, Grand Ole Opry or whatever. Anyway, so
yeah.
And myself and a couple of clients that you know met are going to come in. It is
all. Who is it, X-Time?
No. Although he'd be good too. It is in the 18th. It's called Marketing United. It's in Nashville. Check it out. I'll be there. And then we're flying in like the 18th or 19th, and I got to get my stuff, but I'll let you know. And then maybe we can steal away and brainstorm some stuff and definitely have a cocktail.
Would love it. And I've got a QR version of that book as well that's got 17 podcasts. So I'll bring you a couple copies of both, and we'll go from there.
You're the man. I really appreciate it. Thanks, Colby.
Thanks for the time today.
All right, buddy. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
See ya.
All right, brother.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Brushstrokes, a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. A reminder that this episode was brought to you by Conduit Incorporated. For all your custom content needs, visit www.conduit-inc.com. Conduit Incorporated, channeling content and connections. Well, I think I told you that Dr. Jubenville is a lot of fun, and Colby has a unique perspective. I personally think that his point about safety is a big deal, and that is really what we are all about these days. It's why the kids of today are all hidden away and can hide behind their devices. It's why, quite honestly, a lot of us are. And so if you take that concept if you're someone who wants to sell, forget this idea of trust. That certainly is a big deal, but the step below that is, are you a safe bet? Do you make me feel safe? Are the decisions that we will do together safe? And so kind of a remarkable, for me at least, it was a remarkable uncovering, if you will. So again, my sincere thanks to Colby, and certainly my sincere thanks to all of you for listening to this episode of Brushstrokes. Until next time, see the buffaloes.